It's a show about fantasy football.
Welcome back to a show about fantasy football, which is, again, the best podcast name we could have ever come up with.
Yes.
And, we're happy you're joining us this week. It's Nathan. It's Avery, which is me, by the way. I don't talk to myself in third person like an idiot. And it's Ryan
Brett. He definitely
does. I do not do that.
Don't believe the lies.
And then Ryan Brett joining us live from Minneapolis, Minnesota. John had to work this week, so he is out. But we do have a couple of things that he wrote for us to discuss tonight, including but not limited to the running back dead zone in fantasy, how it's a real thing and how we're going to be avoiding it this year. Also, different types of fantasy draft strategies. Some may know a lot about, you know, strategies like zero wide receiver or hero running back or things like that. Some people may not know, so we're going to get into those and kind of the advantages and disadvantages of each of those, which will also be on the YouTube channel eventually. But we're joined, like I said, by Ryan Brett from Minneapolis, Minnesota, who is running the show tonight. So, Ryan, as much as it pains me to give up control, I guess it's your show now. So
it is my show. I am the captain now. if my first order is captain is Avery, can you please pronounce the city that I am in again? Just for, I got to hear it one more time.
Minneapolis?
It's not Minneapolis. It's not Minneapolis. It's just Minneapolis.
Minneapolis.
See,
you would say it like that too, though. Like,
no, not at all.
Whatever, Nathan.
This is like some Minneapolis.
Say it again.
Minneapolis.
Say it again.
Minneapolis.
Now you're saying it right.
Yeah.
I said it the same way that I did the first two times.
No, you didn't.
You are awesome. All
right, so you learn something new every day, right? So
yeah,
I guess that's what I learned.
You totally
Here's
do.
The thing, Ryan.
You thought it was
Minnesota,
Minneapolis?
Not a relevant U.S. state.
Say, Indianapolis is better.
So I don't...
Be nice, Indianapolis. Be nice to Minnesota right now. We've got flooding going on, okay? Chill out. Our crop yields
so
are down.
So there's a level of sensitivity that...
I thought it only snowed there.
Yeah, no, is it actually like the snow melted? Is that what happened?
Yeah, the polar ice caps are going, and that's what's really getting us right now.
You're getting them from Canada, right? Again, why would you live in a state that borders Canada? We're going to do this. Geographical debate is going to be the first segment of our show every single time now.
I mean, we're just splitting hairs in the flyover states that we occupy, so it's really just brass tacks.
Geographical fun facts about where you live, which I guess wouldn't be fun.
Is Minnesota considered a flyover
Minneapolis?
State?
It might just be too north. But like
I was gonna say,
when do you ever fly over?
Unless you're flying to Canada, at that point you're cooked. So like,
no, you're frozen.
But, you know, shut up, Nathan. Yeah. All right. Well, anyways, what we learned so far in this podcast that Nathan can't pronounce Minneapolis. Like
it was totally Nathan's fault. That's what we deduced.
No. This is not a show about picking on me and putting words in my mouth that Avery actually said.
Really? So, I remember listening to last week's episode.
Yeah, this is a show about fantasy football.
You crapping on me when I got the trivia questions wrong.
Oh yeah, because I'm better than you.
Right, exactly. There you go. All right, Ryan, sorry, we're interrupting, but
yeah, so the news. So we'll start with the news. Not nearly as much has happened over the course of the last week as compared to the week previous. Obviously, the first episode is going to have all the news that happened in the eternity of ever. But as it pertains to the 1 week that has passed from last recording to today is just Ramondre Stevenson. It's the only thing that's changed. The only piece of news besides like minor, you know, arrests and stuff that the NFL has going on.
The Kansas City news.
The only thing we've got is Ramondre Stevenson's contract, which came as a surprise to the three of us. I know we kind of briefly mentioned it, off air, but I did not expect the money nor the term that we got for Ramondre Stevenson.
No, there have been a lot of ways that the New England Patriots organization as a whole has tried to demonstrate that they're moving away from the Bill Belichick coaching regime. And this past week was no exception with them for the first time in never signing a running back to a second deal. And that running back being a day three running back that was taken in the fourth round. Like this,
but it doesn't matter. He's day three at this point.
No, I just think everything about it is just so ironic. And it's so funny because they come out with that, you know, Robert Kraft, essentially infomercial documentary that was supposed to be amazing, but it was all about him and they didn't even like acknowledge Belichick. And then, you know, they do all these different things to, you know, they redo their entire, facility, paint over all of the past success that they've had because it's a new time and a new franchise and all this stuff. I just find it all ironic and funny.
It's pretty corny, I'm not gonna lie.
Oh yeah.
Like that's really corny.
It's terrible. The Colts did it.
Did they really?
Yeah, they did do it.
I didn't know that. That's an awful thing to do.
It's horrible. But all that to say, the Ramondre signing, I honestly do think is great for his dynasty value. Great for how I think they're going to utilize him from a fantasy perspective this year. To me, this is just a reinforcer that he's such a good value in fantasy, because I don't think people in the fantasy community are really going to look at this and change their opinion on what his workload is going to look like. I think this is a huge plus for him.
I think it is too. I mean, you say we were surprised, Ryan, but do keep in mind that I watched a video on YouTube from two very handsome men, even just 2.5 weeks ago, that said the hype is real for these huge dynasty risers. Stock up. And the cover player for that was Ramondre Stevenson. And Ramondre, interestingly enough, like, and this is something that kind of tipped me off, and the reason I want to talk about him in that video is because at practice, Ramondre kept talking to the media about how they were close to a deal. And so I was like,
how is that never news?
Exactly. But I saw it multiple times on Twitter. And so I was like, okay,
But we get X, news about IU Twitter, talking X. to his friend.
Sorry, oh my bad, Ryan. Good and my Lord. Bad, Elon. Well, okay. So, yes, it was the term, I guess, like, as a contract, it's surprising. But, like, there were a couple different warning signs that it was coming.
Yeah.
And now that it has...
My surprise was less to him getting a contract and more so to the amount
the
of...
contract
itself. Yeah, the amount of money in the term. Because he's getting $9 million in annual average value, which puts him at seventh among all running backs. And it's a four-year deal. And he's already, what... 26, I believe. So I mean, this is his second contract. It makes sense. It's that time for a running back to have that happen, but it's the $36 million over four that's surprising to me.
We don't have details yet on that, do we?
I mean, the only detail is really just that it's 17 guaranteed. But $9 million a year, if you know, averaging it, obviously puts him, like as I said, seventh. Right between Joe Mixon and Derrick Henry and DeAndre Swift, who are both Joe Mixon getting 9.875 and Henry and Swift both getting around 8. So, I mean, he's in there, like, he's one of the he's top 10 highest paid running back in football. And it's surprising.
The Patriots. Yeah. I mean, if you, I, you know what the most Patriots thing of all time would be is to have paid Ramondre just to prove that it's a new era. Be like, Bill would have never done this.
You realize I literally already, like, ranted about that. That was the very first thing I said about Ramondre. You spaced it all, didn't you?
No, I listened to the entire thing you said. I'm just saying, like, they did
nope,
it out
spaced
of spite.
It all.
Yeah, you're right. I spaced it all. My bad.
That's what I said. They did it all out of spite. Just another reason.
Is
another
this
way
a podcast where we're gonna crap on Avery the whole time? Sound freaking whine when you go in on me.
My
like,
voice
it's
doesn't
fine.
Sound like that.
No, it sounds like this.
No, it doesn't.
Time. Does
it?
Are you sure
False.
About that? You want to pull up YouTube highlights? And
absolutely.
See? Ryan, does Nathan's voice crack more than the average individual at his age?
All right. So moving on to the first topic of our episode here. Not going to get into those marital squabbles you guys have going on over there.
Real stuff.
First topic of the day. Is the running back dead zone. Touched on it briefly earlier. I know it exists. I hate running backs. They're the most infuriating position in fantasy. And every single year that I've been playing fantasy, which is a while at this point, there's always just that middle ground where I feel happy about zero running backs in this area for one shape or one form or another. It's always kind of a moving target as to where that dead zone falls. For me, I think this year it lands right after that of like Rashad White, maybe. It's like the like late fifth round, early sixth round.
Yep.
And goes kind of until the end of the draft, which is depressing. But that's to me where it lands. I don't know. Maybe I'm off base and there's way more value in there than I'm looking at. But I mean, I'd much rather take an early running back and just shoot my shot at older RBs or wide receivers later on. Not RBs. Good Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think your indicator here of when the dead zone definitely starts is DeAndre Swift. Like to me, it starts with him. And then you've got Derrick Henry going in the same range as Swift. They both have kind of short-term-ish deals. Then you've got like your Joe Mixon's, Tony Pollard's, all those types of guys. And I don't know what you think about it, but I think their prices are kind of odd.
I mean, I think that although you could consider it a dead zone.
I mean, are we talking about fantasy or are we talking about dynasty?
We're talking primarily about fantasy.
Primarily about fantasy. So the dead zone would still start like after Jacobs around where Swift is going.
Yeah, which Swift is running back 24, Jacobs is running back 12, so there's a significant gap there. Isaiah Pacheco is really like it's Kyron Williams, Derrick Henry, Travis Etienne, and then here's the list. Pacheco, Jacobs, Cook, Rashad White, Joe Mixon, Kenneth Walker, Alvin Kamara, David Kamara. So like I think that would probably be considered the dead zone this year. But when you're looking at that range, there are some guys in there I think are kind of gems. I think Rashad White is a gem in that range. I think Alvin Kamara is a gem in that range. And so I think naturally, like, and when you're talking about the running back dead zone and like what it actually is, it's low end running back ones, high end running back threes, basically, because you have the guys at the top that separate themselves. But again, we've kind of talked about those guys: Etienne, Henry, Kyron Williams, Achane, Barkley, Taylor, Gibbs, Breece Hall, Bijan Robinson, Christian McCaffrey. All of them have high end running back one upside, right? And so, you know, last year, running back 8 to 28 made up the dead zone, and one ended up at the same value. 9 were wins, 12 were losses. So you, like, you're splitting almost in half there in terms of like whether or not you
That's
actually...
That's not half. You can't do math. That's not a one-to-one correlation.
You're right. But, I mean, that's a horrible hit rate. It's awful. We talked about this in terms of like return on investment. So it's funny, Ryan, we actually recorded a video on this exact topic almost today. Ooh. Like almost to a T, we recorded a video for Domain Fantasy Football YouTube channel about is this the year of the running back? Because I do think like the top end of running back this year in fantasy football is significantly better than it has been in recent years in terms of the talent and the upside at the top of these drafts. Like guys you're taking in the first round.
Oh,
I'm curious if you agree with that or not, because like Nathan and I think ended up on that page when we were recording this video that the top is better.
Oh, I 100% agree. I mean, it's my opinion is slightly jaded. I've been doing a couple mock drafts using Sleeper's lovely ADP, as I've got a home league starting up our draft after the 4th of July here. But that was kind of the result that I came to, was that like because of how much it's just a coin flip between so many of these middle of the road running backs, that it almost suits me better. And we'll talk about this later on with some of those team build strategies. In my mind, it's better to take one of those upper echelon running backs, a guy that you know is going to be out on the field. I mean, I would even put a little bit of pause on somebody like an Achane, who's technically in that, you know, that safe tier of guys. But those like high level running backs, the guys you're taking are like round 1, 2, 3 of fantasy startups. I'd much rather take one of those guys, fill in my RB2 slot, and then just go ham with wide receivers the rest of the way. Because I feel as though I'm going to be able to get, there's more parity at the wide receiver position as you go later on, like startable receivers, than what you're able to get from, you know, a James Cook scoring 3 touchdowns a year or David Montgomery splitting carries, you know, the rest of the way through. Like it's going to be the first time, it's going to feel so strange, but it's going to be the first time I think ever that I will, in a dynasty startup, be taking a running back early, because I'd rather do that. And if I'm trying to win now, obviously, I'd rather do that than, you know, roll the dice as I've previously done with those middle of the road running backs. If there's no tangible return.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think a lot of this is just we're in the new age of the new generation of running backs, where a lot of your guys up top are your youngest, freshest, spryest assets that are going at the running back position. And in the last couple of years, it's been all of those aging veterans that have been productive for years and years and years. And you're just terrified of taking them because you don't know when the age cliff is going to be. And now it's like Breece, it's Gibbs, it's Bijan. It's, you know, I mean, heck, even Saquon to an extent because of the new situation that he's in. It's Devon Achane going at the end of the second round. It's like, it's interesting. And I do think like one of the most obvious yet somewhat profound statements that we like to make all the time is that there's only 12 wide receiver ones, because for some reason, year after year, because of how many wide receivers there are in fantasy at your disposal, you almost feel like there's more than 12 wide receiver ones because there's so much production there. which is like it almost becomes really important to split the hairs. So many people make these excuses like, well, the difference between this wide receiver and that wide receiver isn't that big of a deal because they're one spot apart from each other. So we're just splitting hairs. I'm like, no, I mean, those hairs become important when you're talking about a cluster of 24 guys and you're trying to figure out which ones are going to be the top 12. And when you're looking in the first two rounds alone in fantasy, 17 of those assets are wide receivers.
Yep.
So at least half of them are not going to be wide receiver ones. Because generally, what do we know about, like, because half of 17 is, you know, 8 or 9. And
which one, math boy?
8.5. And I was just rounding up. Well, it's 8 or 9. It's 8.5. Well, I didn't want to say 8.5 because you can't have a
That's
half
why they don't
player.
Call it a show about math.
I said 8 or 9 for a reason, and because, you know, you're always going to have a couple guys in there that are going top 12 that aren't going to be wide receiver ones either. But these running backs, you've got 7 running backs going in the first two rounds.
True.
So you're not even like out of your running back one or a top 12 running back shot once you're outside of the first two rounds. And what we've seen in the past, even just 2 years ago, was, hey, you've got 7 running backs going in the first round.
Right.
So it's such a different landscape now.
Yeah, it is. And honestly, like I said, in terms of the actual dead zone itself, like, I do think, like, you know, when you're looking at, there's a 55% chance based on the data that John put in here of picking a bust in the running back dead zone. At least one player from the dead zone, though, ends up having a league winning potential. Last year it was Breece Hall, Travis Etienne, and Josh Jacobs. It was in 2022. So the question becomes, and the question that I think we were, you know, meant to answer here when John wrote this was, do you ever draft players in this zone? And how do you know who to draft if you do? And so I think this is interesting. Yeah. Like,
well, let me tell you.
All right, tell us.
Draft in that
you zone. Just tell us, Nathan. Obviously, there's a clear answer here that we just.
I mean, Rashad White's in the middle of that.
I agree with that. Like,
I think you go for volume and opportunity and situations that haven't changed from what they have been in the past too much. So again, Rashad White being case in point. Honestly, I don't love James Cook. I don't think he's the absolute worst value of all time, especially with the type of offense that they're running this year. I'm looking at other guys, like you said, Kamara is a value that you really like in this range. His situation hasn't really changed, and it's not going to. Ramondre Stevenson, his situation has only gotten better, and he's going in this dead zone range. I'm passing up on guys like Najee, who's going at RB21 because he's splitting carries 50-50 with Warren. I think Warren has just as good a chance at being more productive than Najee as the other way around.
Right.
I think Swift, even though I like Swift at RB24, it's a fine price. If he goes up any higher, I'm probably passing up on him because I have no idea what his usage is going to look like in an offense where they're clearly going to pass the ball so much to DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, and Romo Odunze. Like, what is the backfield going to look like there?
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at a guy like Jonathan Brooks, who, even though he's an unproven rookie, we know what that situation looks like, and we know how Dave Canales utilizes his running backs.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Honestly, he put some guys here, and I'm interested to talk about this. Josh Jacobs, because he says this year it starts as soon as Rashad White is picked and lasts about 5 to 7 rounds. So that's a big dead zone. I think Rashad White. So it depends on what ADP you're looking at. He's probably looking more at like actual redraft ADP. We're looking at underdog because it's better, usually more accurate at this point in the season. But here are the guys.
I can compare.
Yeah, here are the guys. He said, I'm curious both of your takes on this. Like Josh Jacobs, running back 10. Obviously, you got Marshawn Lloyd there. He had 3.5 yards per carry last year after 4.9 the year before that. Is he a guy this year that you think is a take in the running back dead zone? And why or why not?
I think for me, the RB10 price that John had listed on here is way too rich for my blood. I think I'd much rather take probably another 4, 5, 6 running backs ahead of Josh Jacobs. I do think Josh Jacobs is going to do well, strictly because he's on the Packers, and for some reason God loves the Packers. But long term, I mean, the Marshawn Lloyd threat is very real and very tangible, and I do think that at some point Marshawn Lloyd takes over chunks and chunks and chunks of that workload, be it if it starts off just in a third down passing role, and maybe it slowly transitions more and more and more. But I think the part of the issue with Josh Jacobs coming off of his 2022 season, where he was one of the best values at the running back position, is the offensive line in Vegas was so abysmal, and the quarterback play was not anything to write home about with Aiden O'Connell. Sorry to the Purdue fans out there. but I mean, everything about his situation is better outside of the running back room because he's got a better quarterback. He's got a better offensive line. He's going to be tasked with less of a role in that because they have Marshawn Lloyd. And as much as it pains me to have to break this information to you, Avery, because they have A.J. Dillon, who they didn't bring back for no reason.
Oh,
he's of no...
Actually, that hurts Nathan more than it hurts me.
That hurts me.
Don't get me wrong.
He is of no value to anybody in a fantasy context. And we've said this phrase time and time again. He's a better NFL player than he is a fantasy asset, which I agree with. He's going to have his role. Maybe it's just, you know, the third and short, fourth and short red zone work, whatever it may be. But Josh Jacobs has a better quarterback, a better offensive line, better offensive play calling. He's going to be in a better positive game script for a running back more often than he would in Vegas. I do think he has a better season, but boy, am I trepidatious about picking him at an RB10 value.
Big word, big word.
Yeah.
Word of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even top 12 for Josh Jacobs after the crap he pulled last year. And I know a lot of people like to give him a break because of the situation, but honestly, like with Marshawn Lloyd coming in alone, I agree with you, Ryan. I'm not even a big AJ Dillon fan. If that's your case for why Jacobs is going to get less carries, I'm not even against that because
Don't bury the lead.
No, I'm just
Marshawn Lloyd is the one bearing that burden.
Yes, Marshawn Lloyd is, but I mean, even AJ Dillon, you're correct. They for some reason just adore giving him the ball, even though he's the most worthless asset.
My voice doesn't crack, huh? So it took all of 10 minutes for you to prove my point.
Avery, stop bullying.
Right. Yeah. Right. What about Austin Ekeler? Austin Ekeler is a guy that, you know, last year was being drafted in the first round and effectively proceeded to suck in fantasy that year. And so, with Austin Ekeler, are you comfortable taking him at like RB21 prices with an ADP of like 62? Do we see
RB38 prices is actually where he's going?
In where are you seeing
on Underdog?
That? Yeah, Underdog is a little more is quite a bit more accurate here. He's going at RB38. His ADP is 127. I mean, this is super. This is a price where I want to take him, honestly, and I'm all for it here. I mean, do I realistically see Austin Ekeler producing at a much higher price than RB38? 100%. Absolutely. Like, I don't know what you think, but...
I mean, I've talked about it. Like, I think in terms of, like, the competition there, you've got Brian Robinson. What does Brian Robinson offer you? He offers you... Well, from a skill set standpoint, we know this from his scouting. Like, he offers you very little from, like, a complete running back standpoint. But especially in the receiving game. I mean, that was the Antonio Gibson role. But the problem was we saw Antonio Gibson in that role and get some opportunity. And really, since he had his big year, he hasn't really been effective or productive. Now, you have a different offense there, right? You've got... it's Dan Quinn as the head coach, but you've got Cliff Kingsbury there running the offense. Mm-hmm. So it has potential to be better than it did with freaking Riverboat Ron, right? I mean, you've got a different scheme. You've got the promise of some more production. And with Austin Ekeler, like, I think there's a good chance. RB21, RB38, whatever, like, his price is, I think that he's somebody right now that not a lot of people are expecting to produce. And I think also playing with a rookie quarterback, I think he's somebody that could be used a lot in the aspect that, you know, he is going to be an easy target for Jaden Daniels as he kind of gets acclimated to NFL life. So I'm curious what you think about that, Ryan. What a fall from grace he's had, honestly, year to year. But it's just interesting because he was so dominant even just a year ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago, yeah. What a fall from grace is, right? He's one of those guys that I want to not touch them with like a 10-foot pole, like almost irrespective
like
of
the Grinch
circumstance. Like, I just don't. Watching him last year was like it was like watching me try to play running back in the NFL. I'm not a fast man. Austin Ekeler looked so slow.
Yeah,
like trying to watch that entire offense play football was like watching you play backyard football in like high school. Not you, Ryan, but like...
I was a dog at backyard football. General, put some respect on my name. Collect.
Actually, so was I. I won the MVP every game.
Okay. We're just telling lies.
They gave out MVP for backyard football? Is that what they do at homeschool co-op?
No, I'm making it up.
Oh, come on now.
Yeah. I get you, Ryan, though. I mean, he did... It didn't look the same.
Out of
which she was also injured. Like there is also that part of it.
Surely out of curiosity, I'm not looking at the underdog ADP. Who is going around him at that running back 38 value?
Well, let me just tell you.
Naheem Hines.
Zeke Elliott. Jerome Ford. Chase Brown. Gus Edwards. Blake Corn. It's not even close to me. Like Eckler is a screaming.
Yeah,
value.
That's he has a value there, but it's just that's just so icky.
Yeah, but I mean, even if you were to split the difference here, because ADP right now across the board is so much different. You've got ESPN ADP that a lot of people are drafting on. You've got underdog ADP. You've got sleeper that people are doing mock drafts on dictating that ADP. You've got, gosh, what else? Yahoo, CBS. They are all over the place, and you can find a lot of value discrepancies there. But if you were to split the difference between 21 and 38, I mean, you're looking at in that range, Tony Pollard, Trey Benson, Javonte Williams, Singletary, Brian Robinson, Tyjae Spears, Jaylen Warren, Raheem Mostert. Like, that's it. That's your high-end running back threes, low-end running back twos, or really high-end running back threes. But to me, that's kind of the range where I think I'd even be comfortable potentially taking a shot on him there just because of the upside that he could potentially have in that offense.
So on underdog, what's Derrick Henry's ADP then?
Running back 9.
So would you consider him a dead zone running back?
Yes and no. I think he's a tier above, obviously, the guys that we've mentioned up until this point, but he's definitely not a guy that I'm super comfortable with like I am the guys at the top. Like your dead zone could theoretically start with him because you got Achane, you got Kyron Williams, Derrick Henry. After Kyron Williams, it is Derrick Henry and then like ETM, Pacheco, Jacobs. So I guess you could say in theory that the drop-off happens after ETN because you kind of know what you're going to get.
That's kind of where we established it on the video today.
Yeah.
It just depends. Like if John's using...
I know, that's what I'm saying. If John's using... I'm just verbalizing it, trying to see if I think the drop off does start at Derrick Henry.
I mean, if John's using ESPN and Yahoo ADP, you've got a significant portion of the market and a significant portion, therefore, of our listeners
Correct.
Who are drafting. And so, like, if he Correct. Is really the running back 11, like Derrick Henry is somebody that if your league mates are letting him fall to you in that range, he's a no brainer. He is a no freaking brainer. He's in a better situation than he was last year. Like, what are we going to bet on Derrick Henry, like, taking a step back physically? And
we have been for the last 4 years.
It's not a good strategy. And in terms of safety, I think he's one of the safest picks past running back, like, 7. When you get down there, I'm like, Derrick Henry's got top 6 upside. Do I think Derrick Henry's going to be the running back 1 or 2? No, because I think, you know, you've got guys with high receiving upside that are now going to take that in half-point PPR leagues and full-point PPR leagues. But with that being said, I mean, Derrick Henry, in terms of the workload he's getting, is going to the team that ran the ball more than any other team in the NFL last year in the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah,
and so because of that, I think that Derrick Henry could get a ton of volume. It would be interesting because Baltimore really hasn't had a back for the last 2 or 3 years that has completely stayed healthy and been consistent, right? And so what does it look like when we get a Derrick Henry in a Baltimore Ravens offense? While granted, it's not a Greg Roman offense anymore, it's still an offense that the year without Greg Roman, they still ran the ball more than everybody else, right? So, I mean, which again, if people associate the running the ball thing with Greg Roman, it's true to some extent, but it's not the only reason that was like that in Baltimore. And
yeah,
so with Derrick Henry,
let's not...
I think he's a no-brainer.
Let's not act like the new offensive coordinator that they hired going into last season, Monken, is not... Like he was at Georgia. Georgia
yes.
noted running backs all over the field and tight ends. They don't... They operate a lot based on their running backs. I'm totally with you with Derrick Henry. The only real concern I have for him is, as you said, he's not got the highest receiving upside. He's going to get his to a certain degree. The touchdown vulturing from Lamar is one of the things that freaks me out a little bit more. But again, we've talked about it ad nauseum. They're the touchdowns are the least sticky stat in the history of statistics. So if it comes down to me being a little bit scared about his touchdowns, I'm going to take just him as a opportunity play. Like he's going to get so many touches. maybe not touchdowns, but he's in a better offense, better offensive line. I don't see a world where he has a like a down season and compared to what he's done in the previous few, barring injury.
Yeah. And then, you know, Javonte Williams. This is interesting because I just read something in our Discord about Javonte Williams and how, like, people are essentially saying because of that report from that beat reporter in Denver that he's, like, on the outs of making even the team. And the price reflects that to some extent. The price really reflected him just not being proven his first couple of years. But now, running back 27, running back 31 on underdog, so an even bigger drop. Like,
would you be shocked if Sean Payton out of the blue decided to cut him?
I think he's a cheesehead, so it wouldn't surprise me at all. Like, he's Sean Payton is kind of like, I don't know, the Bo Nix stuff has kind of turned me off to Sean Payton a little bit more than I used to be like, but, oh, Sean Payton's
but
one of the best.
But Taysom Hill didn't?
What Bo Nix stuff?
Okay.
What Bo Nix stuff?
Well, I gave him with the Taysom Hill stuff, it was different because Taysom Hill's still being used like that. And so I'm like, maybe it wasn't a Sean Payton thing.
I mean, there
just the like the stuff in the. Go ahead, Ryan.
There was a period in time where Sean Payton thought that Taysom Hill was going to be the successor to Drew Brees, and they weren't going to lose a beat in that offense.
Oh, yeah. They tried him for a few games when Brees went down with that thumb injury, like his last year? And they won like four straight games with Taysom Hill, but he was so incompetent as a passer, they just ran the ball all day.
I think just with like Sean Payton now, it's the fact that with, you know, with Bo Nix, it was kind of, okay, he's yeah, the way he talks about Bo Nix, like I get that you are enamored with a rookie quarterback, but he also, like, when you're talking about around the league, how the Patriots are talking about Drake May, how the Commanders are talking about Jaden Daniels, and even how the Bears are talking about how Matt Eberflus is talking about Caleb Williams. Like, you know, they're acknowledging, like, they're going to have to get better at this. Nothing is earned, blah, blah, blah.
It's taking the pressure off their shoulders is exactly what they're doing as a franchise.
And with Sean Payton, I mean, it's also the fact that, you know, he said in the draft room and he's like, yeah, we basically, like, baited people to jump over us and blah, blah, blah. Like, I wonder how much of it is he's just kind of getting to be a corny old man.
I wonder how much of it is optics, too. Like, you've got really positive optics for Jaden Daniels. There are circles that still really like Drake May. Everyone obviously obsessed with Caleb Williams. High expectations for all those guys. So for those top five picks, you really want to like temper expectations for those guys as a franchise instead of putting all the pressure on their backs because they already have a ton of pressure. For Bo Nix, it's like, you suck. You don't belong to go where you are. So like Payton is almost, to me, it feels like he's just almost defending why they took him there and trying to make him look as good as they believe that he could be and trying to like make him look better in a positive light, like to the media and to the public, because he's just such a blow off right now, I feel like, for a lot of people.
Right. So in terms of like how that affects Javonte Williams, like I don't think necessarily that he's going to get cut. I definitely think he's the second best running back on that roster if he's not the first. Right. I mean, Jaleel McLaughlin's not amazing. He's good. He was good last year in certain stretches, in certain aspects.
He really
of the
fell
game.
Off. He lost his.
He did it. I think people are just
effectiveness after a couple games.
I mean, really, what have we heard about Javonte Williams besides that one tweet from that one guy?
Nothing.
Yeah, it's nothing. It's one report and one guy's opinion. Like, will the tweet said, like, will he even make the roster? Question mark. And I mean, wait, he's asking a question. The answer is, yeah, Javonte Williams is going to make the roster. And when he does, his price at running back 31 is not horrible, but he's also a guy I'm going to be careful with because he has shown us what he is over his first couple of years. When he's been healthy, he's not always been productive. You have the exception being the rookie year where he came in, had a ton of receptions, had a good amount of touchdowns, and was able to produce. But
that was pre-injury. After the injury, hasn't shown any explosiveness whatsoever.
Exactly.
Like, at least what he used to have.
So I don't think that he's a guy that you should be picking in the dead zone by any means. But I'm curious, Ryan, if you agree with that or disagree, you know, just being kind of more removed from that than we are.
I mean, I've certainly seen the buzz about the will he make the roster, and I think that's we're in that, forgive the pun, but we're in that dead zone of the NFL offseason where everybody's looking for
it.
News. So like I don't know if they're gonna cut him. I don't know why you would, considering, you know, he's at least shown to be productive and he was clearly healthy enough to pass a physical. So I don't know if it's really a thing where you'd want to cut your losses. Now, granted, I'm not at practice every day. I don't know what they're looking at.
I mean, what's his hit on the cap this year?
It can't be a lot. He's still on a rookie deal.
It can't be
a
lot.
It's
fourth year of his rookie deal, right?
But I mean, I don't know. They do have a plethora of running backs just in that backfield, because they do have, like, I mean, they brought in Estime this year and Blake Watson, and they have Samaje Perine, and like, it's, I don't know. I struggle with it a little bit. Avery, I can remember back I'd say probably 2 or 3 weeks ago. We were doing a dynasty startup, or no, a fantasy startup on one of the live streams. Maybe it was dynasty. I can't remember. But I picked Javonte Williams in like in this dead zone area, and you just laid into me on the live stream because my team was stacked before it, and it was a good looking team, and it just totally got off the rails with Javonte. And
it's probably dynasty.
It may have been, but that notwithstanding, I don't hate Javonte as much as it seems like everybody else is. It seemed very weird to me that everybody was just so quick to jump off the bandwagon, as quick as it had happened, because I mean, after his rookie year, he was going probably what, like the third, fourth round, because the hopes were so high, and then he slipped after his injury, which is totally understandable. But I mean, after last season where he didn't return to being like this, you know, RB1 upside player, it just fell by the wayside, and I don't know. I thought he did okay. It's not like we had high hopes for that offense last year.
Yeah, but I think a lot of the reason that so many people are low on him is, even if he shows some bright spots and some hope this year, then he's staring down a second contract off of his rookie deal, and who's going to pay a guy who's come off of a brutal knee injury that's a shell of what he could have been.
Yeah, but pre-injury. I mean, how much of that are you factoring into a fantasy pick versus a dynasty pick? Like, in dynasty, that's totally warranted, is worrying about the future's longevity. Yeah. But in terms of fantasy, where I'm looking at this in a one-year window versus a 3-year win window, I have significantly less concerns about Javonte Williams, especially if he actually makes the roster, then all of this conversation is for naught, because he's going to be the number one back. I don't think Jaleel McLaughlin is really going to be in the conversation as soon as Audric Estime gets a handle on the playbook and gets healthy after going, he had some knee surgery this offseason. But minor stuff. Like, I don't think Jaleel McLaughlin is going to have staying power in that offense. I think it's going to be a Javonte Williams offense still. And I understand, you know, why his value has adjusted so much, and I'm going to have to see how it plays out before I really make a true stand on it. But one thing I know for certain about the Broncos is that Bo Nix sucks, and I will not back down off that take. I've had it for 6 years, 6 years of Bo Nix hatred, and it's staying.
Yeah. Since you were 13, that's nuts. That's a long time. So, all right. So in terms of like values in the running back dead zone here, and John kind of listed these for us, and we talked about most of these. Kamara, a value. Ramondre, a value. Derrick Henry, if he's in the dead zone, he's a value. He also mentioned Jonathan Brooks. We're very high on the young rookie. He should be hitting his stride at the end of the season when fantasy champions are won, and you're getting him like 6th, 7th round. Like, he's maybe even later. Actually, like 8th, 9th round on underdog. He's a great value. Devin Singletary and Zach Moss are kind of the other guys. Less sexy names, but also could be some decent dart throws just because they're less sexy. And so, in terms of the running back dead zone, it's going to be a wait and see, but it's definitely going to be an interesting year for running backs. So, Ryan, I think it's probably time we move to the game show portion of this thing.
100% agree with you. We are cruising through this running back conversation. We're just stimulating people's ears. But,
heck yeah.
Game show. As John wrote the outline for this a little bit, so we'll see exactly what our brains can concoct here. But fantasy football punishments. It's obviously something that goes viral every single year in home leagues around the country. There's some new thing every single year. Whether it's, I'm sure you guys have heard people taking like the ACT or the SAT or like a full body wax. What are some of the funnier fantasy football punishments that you guys have come across in your long storied careers of fantasy football?
The one that was going viral last week was the McDonald's one.
Yes.
That was really funny. Like that guy, he ate but I forget what it was he ate the most of. Like, he started his day with like 20 hash browns, 2 big breakfasts, and then like a bunch. I mean, he ended up having to eat so much, like probably 6,000 or 7,000 calories minimum, and still spent 12 hours there. Like that's
oh
is
oh my gosh,
that is brutal.
Yeah.
I saw a punishment once where like the loser had to spend like 24 hours in like a dog kennel or something like that.
Oh,
that's
God.
Pretty harsh.
I've seen one where a guy was in a dog kennel and they had every single condiment that you could dream of.
That's what it was.
And yeah. They just dumped them in it.
Yeah.
And then they put something on that I think it like hurt. I think it was like super hot, like hot sauce or something. And he was like, oh my gosh, because yeah. It hurts so bad.
Yeah.
That's probably one of the worst ones I've seen.
There are some really creative ones out there. I personally have never really suffered. I've always just played for money. So like my punishment was I didn't win money. But there are definitely some like really funny ones out there. And
yeah,
I think it would
be really fun
more.
Is if you put someone in like one of those like baby pools full of like Pepsi or Coke or something. And then you just dump tubs of Mentos in there.
Doesn't that kind of only awesome. Work if it's like in a condensed
yes.
space?
Well, yeah, it would be in a condensed space.
No, but like, it's,
yeah, Nathan.
Okay, never mind.
Well, it's a reaction of the yeah.
No, you're right. You're right. The burger bag. Yeah, Nathan
spent actually,
$400 on Pepsi and Mentos and then dumped them all, and nothing happened.
It would just be a Diet Coke hot tub. It would just be a little fizzy.
I guess it would just. I guess it would just overflow.
Yeah,
and bubble over. That's
blow
true.
Up.
You're right. Well, no, no, I wouldn't expect
Nathan's
it to blow
brain,
up.
He was
but
like
still...
blown up to the sky, like
no, that is not what I was picturing.
Yeah, we got to teach him.
I was just picturing like if you force someone
physics.
To sit down and their neck is like, you know, like just above it or whatever, and then you put something in there, and then it just comes up and it like,
all right,
you
there
know,
you
covers
go.
Them or whatever.
Put yeah. something in yeah. there. How
not
about
that
a
it, would
piranha?
It wouldn't explode. It obviously wouldn't explode because it's. There is obviously a difference between a bottle and a tub.
Thank you. I was unaware of this information.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah.
So no, Nathan is also qualified to teach us about this stuff too. So
physics.
Yes.
Guy.
Yes.
I would like
I am
to
a physics
tell
guy.
A little story. My home league when I was in college, we did a keeper league for a couple years before transitioning to Dynasty, and our punishment. We ended up actually only doing it 1 year because COVID kind of got in the way. I don't really know how, but it did. Our punishment was you had to carry around a 10-pound sack of potatoes everywhere you went. If you went to the gym, if you went to class, if you went to the shower, it had to go to the bathroom with you. And you had to carry around that 10-pound sack of potatoes until you ate every single pound of potatoes that was in that sack. And it took...
Oh, my gosh.
I think it took like 2 weeks, and it was like... You know, the fantasy season finishes before the NFL playoffs are done. And we all lived in a house together. And he, like, cooked French fries. Like a giant plate of French fries. Like, two times during playoff games. And there was still, like, 6 pounds of potatoes left.
Oh, my gosh.
It's
dude.
Just so off the wall. I don't even know how we came up with it, to be quite honest.
That's awesome.
Here's my question. What if those potatoes started like sprouting and stuff?
You just cut off the sprouts.
Before you can finish them. It 2 weeks.
Yeah, you just cut off the sprouts.
Yeah, but like what if it gets like rotten on the inside?
What is this like
after 2 weeks?
Jack and the Magic Beanstalk, Nathan?
Well, I mean, sometimes the potatoes go bad after 2 weeks.
I haven't
That's
personally
a lot of potatoes.
Seen that, but...
I haven't either.
I mean, I guess ideally you wouldn't
if
want
you
to be holding
in,
a sack of
potatoes
for 2 weeks.
If you keep them in a dark,
weeks,
dry place, so. They won't.
As it says on the packaging.
Yeah, I mean, it's as simple as that.
Yes, but still, over time, they still go bad. It's not
I
like
love,
it's not like they last forever.
This is.
What am I going to shut
this
potatoes in a
Nathan,
dark
is
closet?
Is Ryan being
forever?
Like, we have this really cool fantasy football just, punishment, and we're like, oh my gosh, that's funny. And Nathan's like, well, wouldn't they go bad?
Well, yeah. That's like, what I'm saying.
It must be fun. All
right. So, is there a game behind this, Ryan?
So the game that John had written down was, you guys both need to come up with a punishment.
Oh, I'm gonna lose.
And then
yeah, I'll lose.
We're gonna figure out whose is funnier, and they will then be the winner. I would like to point out that Avery, you are down 1-0 in this competition.
Okay, so I gotta win.
You gotta beat the homeschooled kid on coming up with a funny competition or a funny punishment for losing at fantasy football.
I think my fantasy football punishment is sitting here listening to Nathan sneeze.
Yeah,
is that funny enough?
Uh-huh.
Are you a weird? All right,
so how long do we have, Ryan?
You can just give the win to Avery.
I'm gonna give you 2 minutes tops.
Two minutes.
What are you going to do during the 2 minutes?
I'm going to just listen to you guys banter back and forth. Or I can
sing. But how
sing.
Am I going to think while I do that?
Think out loud, man.
All right, Ryan, you need to tell more fantasy football punishment stories while we think of this.
More punishment stories? Okay.
You got to do something. All right, like, so I got to think.
When I was in high school, we had another one. This is a different league that's now defunct, and it was a full body wax for losing, which was maybe – the guy said it was maybe the most painful thing he's ever experienced, because it wasn't like – we're obviously not making you do like your hair or your eyebrows or anything, but he was a hairy man, and his shoulders, his chest, all of his legs and everything. And he ended up looking like he was an Olympic swimmer at the end of it. But it took like hours to get done, because if you can imagine sitting there and just having to, you know, wax your skin the whole time, it's gotta be an incredibly painful task. So that was one that we had in high school, which was a little bit, I'm glad I never lost that league, to say the least. I would have been fine with the potatoes. That would have been easy. Just make some mashed potatoes and just eat nothing but carbs for a couple weeks. Another one that I saw over the course of the extensive research that I did about fantasy football punishments, standing on like a street corner in like your city. So like in Minneapolis, it'd be you'd probably do it on campus probably, because you wouldn't necessarily want to go in downtown Minneapolis. But standing on a corner or in a median in your city with one of those signs that just says, like, I suck at fantasy football. It's just, like, if you do it, like, yeah. If you're in a college league, like, you do it in high school and you do it, like, you have to stand, like, outside of your high school or something, it might be the most demoralizing thing to ever experience. Because it's just all people that you know riding past you in cars and walking past you, just having to just stare at you while you stand in the middle of the street with a sign just telling everybody that you're a loser, which I'm sure is what everybody wants to do.
I have a decent one.
All right.
I'll still lose. Go ahead. But yeah. It's worth a shot.
All right. Go ahead.
What about you have to go downtown or wherever, and you're on a corner or whatever, and you have to sing songs, or if you're musically inclined, you can play an instrument, you have to do that, and you have to make, you have to get a certain amount of money. So like $50, $75, but however long you're there, the only money you can spend on food when you take breaks is the money that you get from singing those songs. But you have to reach like whatever number that's pre-established. So like $75 or something.
Okay.
And then once you get there, you can leave, but it's like, how long can I do this and get to the number that I'm supposed to get to without eating? And then you're out a ton of money when you have to go and get food.
All right. Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Okay. The one I came up with was this. If you lose your fantasy football league, your league mates can pool money to fly you to whatever city that they choose, and with no luggage. And the only way that you can come back home is convincing somebody at the airport you flew to give you their ticket to fly home. So you have to.
How is that even possible?
How is what possible?
Brother, that is optimistic to think there's going to be a person to give you a plane ticket.
Yeah, I know.
Exactly. That's the point. So until you can convince somebody to give them your plane ticket or give you their plane ticket, you're stuck in that airport.
So what? You're just going to.
What airport? Is this like JFK or is this like
the league mates can choose. Okay. It depends. Like you can pull together your money. Like
I was gonna say, if you put them at JFK, that's
I mean,
a
you could
sentence.
Put limits on it. You could be like within the continental US, but
okay,
like,
yeah.
Imagine a punishment where you got sent to, I don't know,
Topeka, Kansas.
Exactly. And you had to sit at that airport until you convinced somebody to give you a plane ticket.
Yeah. I mean, you're just never coming home. To be quite honest with you, like, you're just never coming home.
I mean, because every time you go
up
to somebody.
You know what else would be really funny? I was driving through a neighborhood a couple days ago, and you know, once you get through a super extensive neighborhood, you're like, I have no idea where I am. And then you just drive around until you can find the exit. What if you blindfolded someone, put them in the middle of a neighborhood, and then you just drove away and you told them to get out?
Yeah,
walk out.
That's pretty funny. I thought about saying, you know, you drive somebody out into the middle of the woods, like blindfolded, like they do in The Office, and you just leave them there, and they have to find their way home with no technology. Yeah. Like, but the plane, like, for I think there
that's
would have
pretty,
to.
That's pretty
I think,
unoriginal I at think, this point, I, though.
It is.
It's been,
it is. Yeah. So, like, with the airport thing, like, I think you'd have to put a limit on it. Like, you if you're there for a week, then you get to fly home. But like, you have a week to get back.
How would they get food? Do you give them money or anything, or they have to ask for money too?
I think that would be established in the pre-punishment rules, but the
that
main,
they're
either can, get a
they
budget,
get their card or a budget, or
a budget, or yeah, but you also have to prevent them from just
Man,
buying a plane ticket.
That's
home.
Pretty rough.
So yeah, there you go.
It's pretty extreme.
I was going extreme for mine.
That is extreme.
So
yeah, I don't.
All right, Ryan, who's one?
I mean, it pains me to say, but I think I have to go with Nathan just because of how like.
Wow.
It's so unbelievably infeasible to be able to just convince somebody like, oh, hey, my fantasy football league mate sent me to the middle of nowhere airport. Would you be able to give me your ticket that you're going to take to get home so that I can get home? They won't allow me to buy. That's absurd.
Well, that was kind of the point.
I know.
It's a little too absurd.
Like if it were like a $1,000 league or something like that would definitely be a punishment.
But
that would
still,
be.
Like that's rough.
All right. Well,
it
I
is
mean,
rough.
I definitely think mine was.
Sounds like I win, and sounds like I'm better than you again, which I did not expect this time.
I honestly didn't expect him to pick you either.
It's certainly a harsher punishment, and it's certainly one that like, you know, I see that scrolling across my TikTok feed. I'm like, okay, this is funny. But at the same time,
it's definitely funny to imagine.
It's so
yeah.
It's almost so unrealistic that I don't think anybody would have the gall to do it.
Well, I didn't know we were being judged on realism, or I would have done something.
Well,
more
I feel
realistic.
Like it's
I thought we were doing it based on comedic value.
Well, I mean, comedic value,
and that's definitely funnier.
Like, climb to the top of the Statue of Liberty with a sign that says I suck at fantasy football.
Right.
Yeah, right. I mean that's unrealistic as well. Though they have security at the Statue of Liberty, they're not letting you climb up that thing. Like you just get arrested. See, I mean, like, if we're doing it based on, like, being realistic, then...
Ryan Avery can't handle losing. It's okay. Just...
Well, I thought we were just doing it to... I thought we were trying to, like, make the funniest punishment.
Yep. Just like you thought that Frank Gore was Jerry Rice last week.
That's why I said that number, though, because I had the receiving record in my head, and I was
There's
like,
no excuse there. That is an abysmal number.
No, I can understand the logic
for rushing yards.
It. I can understand the logic behind
Okay.
We're going to transition off the games here. No more punishments. Being a punishment to our listeners.
I didn't like that game, by the way. I didn't think it was that funny.
Wasn't my game.
I liked the last one.
I'm a
better.
Trivia guy.
I am too.
I think I like going at it with trivia.
And also, like, again, that's so subjective. Like, Ryan basically just got to pick which one he likes more.
Right.
And I don't trust Ryan.
Oh, thanks.
So
love
you.
To hear
you
that
and I go at
man.
It with trivia, man.
I know.
All right.
Yeah, but
trivia is my jam.
Yeah, I make one small mistake in trivia, though, and I'm the world's largest idiot.
Yep, you are.
Oh, I wouldn't have it any other way. All right, moving on. Jump into our next segment here before we wrap it up. We're getting a little short on time, so we will have to kind of breeze through this a little bit. But draft strategies, especially early round draft strategies. We're getting it's a little bit too early to be discussing the specifics of said strategies and which players to take when and values, so on and so forth. However, there are plenty of different strategies, different types of drafts that people use in order to win their leagues, especially in fantasy as it compares to Dynasty. That being said, the various draft strategies that I listed out, this was my segment, all pertain to Superflex, I guess, because that's the majority of what I play and what everybody should play. It's way better. I digress. Those draft strategies, just to breeze through them. Dual elite QB, taking a quarterback with your first pick and your second pick, setting yourself up at those marquee positions going forward. And we got the one QB and a stud running back or one QB and a stud wide receiver. Kind of just pick your poison, so to speak, at that second position there, depending on values, I would assume. Or I guess if you've just got a hankering for some... I don't know, some Puka Nacua in the second round and just really want to get after it. Go be my guest. And then my least done strategy, but my favorite one to work through a draft with is double wide receiver. Taking somebody like a Justin Jefferson or a CeeDee Lamb in the first round and then snapping it back around in the second and getting probably in this year a value of like potentially like a Marvin Harrison, AJ Brown, somebody in that range.
Devontae Adams.
Yeah, because it is just so fun to not have any of your quarterback position settled, but know at a minimum you're going to have two of the top, I'd say, you know, with the names mentioned, I'd say two of the top 10 receivers in fantasy football. It's so much fun to just have to navigate yourself through that draft, especially in a redraft league, because there's not nearly as much pressure on having long-term feasibility. But I am curious as to you guys who are in significantly more leagues than I am, and have to talk about this stuff significantly more frequently than I do. What do you guys prefer to build your teams in those early rounds, be it in fantasy, be it in dynasty? What do you guys find yourself doing, and what do you guys prefer to do if all is easy?
So is this a super flex dynasty format?
Not always. That's just one of
it's
for some.
Yeah, it's super flex for sure. But
because it's dual elite QB. I mean, but even in a super flex redraft, usually you're not taking two QBs in the first couple rounds. That's kind of why I'm. Which one? Because I have different favorite strategies for different formats. So which format do you want us to give our favorite for?
Start with fantasy, and then if we've got time, we'll jump into dynasty and just see where the ocean takes us.
My favorites in redraft leagues are typically one running back, one wide receiver.
Dang it.
I like going with one at each of those positions, and I have really liked it in recent years, mainly because, again, with running backs, you've seen a lot of people kind of shy away from picking running backs altogether. So I also think it kind of gives you a little bit of a higher ceiling. Running backs typically are associated with more risk, but they are in turn associated with more upside as well. While with where you're picking wide receiver, you know the high upside guys, and wide receivers in the first and second round are going to be high upside, absolutely, but they are going to be more secure and safe than taking a running back there. And so kind of balancing out the mix of security and upside with taking the most secure position, taking the highest upside position. I mean, because back in the day, running backs ran fantasy leagues. Like, I mean, when I grew up, I went heavy running back almost every single time I drafted a fantasy draft, because running backs were so much more productive than wide receivers back then.
Well, consistently, too, on a week-to-week basis, they're so much more reliable than your wide receivers were.
Exactly. And so like, in my experience when I was younger, like, running backs ran leagues.
You always go running back.
Yeah, yep. So... you know, I like nowadays, especially playing in PPR leagues, which back then it was standard scoring that I was mostly playing in, so that's a little bit different. In PPR leagues, especially half PPR, I like going one running back, somebody with receiving upside. So you're basically taking somebody with that touchdown upside, with that consistent rushing volume upside that also has reception upside, and then taking a wide receiver there as well. So I'm curious for you.
Yeah, I was going to pick running back and wide receiver as well. I think starting right out the gate, essentially well-rounding your roster at the two most important positions in fantasy is the way to go. I don't really know why I would. Let me put it this way. In your normal 1QB fantasy league, I cannot tell you the last time that I took one of the top quarterbacks.
Oh, God, no.
Like a Josh Allen, a Patrick Mahomes, or a Jalen
I did that
Hurts.
Last year a couple times, and I don't think I will this year.
No, I don't remember the last time that I did it, and I don't think I will ever do it. Seriously, why take a shot on someone that is honestly with the variance in who ends up being the QB 1-3 overall over the years, with the exception of maybe Josh Allen? Like, why even mess with it when you're only starting one every single week and you can get better values for a top 12 producing quarterback in the 7th and 8th round with your Goffs and your Tuas and those types of guys where you're not really relying on them to be ultra successful, but if they are, it's a win, and it's at a fraction of the price, and you're selling yourself short of getting some of those top producing assets at the running back and wide receiver position where you have to start multiple of those every single week. And the same kind of applies to the tight end strategy. Kelce might be a bit of an exception this year, and I might find myself drafting Kelce because he's going in the 3rd round. So that might be a difference compared to what I usually do. Because Kelce, I mean, we're used to seeing Kelce go in the 1st round. This is the first time I haven't seen him go in the 1st round in years. It's been a really, really long time.
4 or 5 years.
So that's kind of where I stand. I'm with you on the running back and wide receiver for sure. Any other build, it kind of just scares me because I'm already starting out my draft not well-rounded.
I mean, I think most years the wide receiver would be the next choice for me. But this year, like we've talked about this on a video, I am heavily considering.
You're heavily considering two running backs, yeah.
Yeah, like, because I like think the upside there at the beginning of these drafts.
Depends on who falls, because one interesting thing too is like in the 2nd round, how many running backs are going in the 2nd round? Maybe three of the 7 going top 24. So what if some of those guys going at the tail end of the 1st fall to the 2nd? Maybe you end up getting multiple of those, you know, like top five running backs in the first couple rounds. So it's depending on where you're drafting.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting. So I will say, in terms of Superflex Dynasty leagues, because really we play in redraft 1QB redraft leagues and Superflex Dynasty leagues. That's where we primarily play.
I think you lock down a top 12 quarterback because that's a huge advantage.
I'm a sucker for dual elite QB. I want to do a video on this actually, because when you think about building a team around two elite quarterbacks, you literally never get an elite quarterback cheaper than you do in a startup draft.
100%
in the first round and the second round. Like, so guys like even Jordan Love, Kyler Murray, Trevor Lawrence going there in the second round, you try to trade for them, the amount, it's why startup trades are usually where you get away with a lot of fleeces. It's why also prices become unrealistic outside of the startup, is because you literally cannot get one cheaper than doing it in the second round of a dynasty startup.
Yeah. And also, like, you're trying to accurately reflect the demand of those positions in the NFL. That's like right. The entire point of Dynasty is you're playing GM on your own roster. So why would I limit the demands of the quarterback position, which is the most valuable position in the NFL, and make it one QB?
Right.
Like, why would I do that when and make Justin Herbert completely essentially valueless because with a $250 million contract
right.
and top 12 producing quarterback upside every single year.
Sure. That's like why Dynasty we prefer Superflex. Like,
correct.
I mean, heavily.
Correct. And that's my biggest argument to everyone that always says, like, give me a reason why you prefer Superflex over 1QB, because I think 1QB is the best. And I'm like, this is the reason why. This, you play Dynasty to be a GM, and this is the perfect way to do it.
It's
and
a
people
lot
are like, well,
to...
you don't start like, we want to be like an NFL team and you don't start two QBs on your team. I'm like, you don't have 12 teams in the NFL. You have 32. Like, seriously.
That's the unrealistic portion that they pick out to make their argument. Like,
right.
Yeah. I mean, we're also drafting pretend players and mixing them on teams. Like, you didn't point that out.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I'm curious, Ryan, for your redraft and dynasty leagues, like as we wrap up here, what your favorite strategies are as well. But that's kind of where I lean there.
Yeah. Redraft, I'm totally with you, especially this year, going at least one running back, one wide receiver, if not, Avery, as you touched on, going double running back. I mean, we talked about it with the dead zone. The running back values, there's such an upper tier there, an upper two tiers, I guess. And the fall off, in my opinion, is really severe, which, I mean, I might find myself doing a little bit of an uncomfortable strategy in Dynasty going forward, because normally I am, like you, heavy dual elite QB, and if I can't get that second elite QB, I'm going to go with a wide receiver. I might kind of shift that a little bit. And instead of going quarterback, wide receiver, and then, you know, taking a shot on one of those fringe dead zone to early running backs, I might start taking a stud running back earlier, just because of it. We always say that taking or finding running back production is the easiest thing to do, be it through a trade or, you know, somebody off the waiver wire. But I'm having a real hard time in dynasty leagues where I don't have any running backs being able to trade for a running back and it not costing me a top 24 wide receiver.
Interesting.
And that's kind of why I wanted to talk about this in the dynasty format. It's like, I'm seeing a change to where, like, when I started heavily playing Dynasty like 4 years ago, it was all like not touching a running back in a startup with a 10-foot pole. And now I'm starting to feel like I'm almost hurting myself a little bit in doing that and starting to maybe think about taking a running back earlier and potentially foregoing that because of the parity at the wide receiver position. But again,
I mean, their value has dropped drastically compared to, I mean, your top guys were going top six just a few years ago at the running back position. So
it's complete. The market, the running back economy has completely shifted. So that's interesting, because I still lean not taking a lot of running backs in Dynasty. I really do.
Oh, I mean, don't get me wrong. I still do lean that, but I am starting to have a little bit more in the concern aspect about, like, if I leave the second round with two good quarterbacks or a quarterback and a good receiver, almost at best what I'm getting in the third round is Saquon Barkley Devon Achane, Kyren Williams, which is fine with me, but it's those three. And there's going to be so many other teams that aren't going to be taking one of those stud running backs early because of how much of a taboo it is in terms of the dynasty landscape that it might be one of those things where, you know, you got to sell high, you got to buck the trend and fade the public. Mm-hmm. And if everybody's saying, you know, we still have to, this desire to not draft running backs early, it gets to a certain point where people might start to shift around, and then I'm going to be holding the bag with no running backs whatsoever. And I've got to sit here with my running back one of Kenneth Walker and my running back two of
exactly
Joe Mixon for a year. And I don't really want to run that risk too much longer, because I'm having a hard time replacing that value.
You know, for some reason, I don't necessarily blame you. I get it. Like, there's definitely more to be talked about here, but we have a live stream in 1 minute, so we're going to have to kind of wrap this up here. So, Ryan, do you have any parting thoughts before we kind of wrap this up? We can definitely. I think we should get into this more. This is interesting to me.
My only parting thought is Bo Nix sucks. I don't like him. I've never liked him. Jeez, and
you know he listens, right? What in the world?
Shoot, you're right. The legend of Bo Nix is listening to the Domain Fantasy Football and our podcast, of course.
Absolutely.
That's my only parting thought. I don't have anything else for you. Go Oilers.
Nice. Yeah. All right. Well, guys, we have had a lot of fun podcasting with you this week. If you enjoy the show, please leave a 5-star rating for us. It really helps kind of grow us. And also, the best thing you can do is to... the best thing you can do to help us grow is to tell your friends and share the podcast. So check out our channels, Domain Fantasy Football on YouTube and Dynasty Domain, depending on what kind of fantasy football you play. We really appreciated you guys joining us. We'll see you next week.
It's a show about fantasy football.